Welcome to the Security Today podcast. I'm your host, Uncle Bear, and this podcast is brought to you by Sprinter Business Solutions. And this segment is a new segment to the Security Today lineup called The Room Where It Happens. That's right. In this segment, we will be interviewing industry leaders as we learn about their story, what experiences they've had, and their take on the future of this industry. Based on a leading song in the second act of the award-winning Broadway play Hamilton, The Room Where It Happens is the room that everyone wants to be in because that's the room where major changes gets done. Well, guess what? Thanks to Security Today, you get to be in that room now. So I hope you enjoy, and as always, you're welcome. Welcome to Security Today podcast. This is a new segment that we're doing. I'm Uncle Bear, your host. It's called The Room Where It Happens, and I'm trying to branch out and make sure that I'm getting some of the industry leaders in front of you guys. So today I have none other than Lee Otis, and we're going to just dive into who he is and what he's doing in the industry and some of his feedback on the industry and the trends. But I'm so excited to have you here today. And I'm excited for this podcast to kind of branch out into, once again, another segment that we're bringing good information and getting you guys some of that cutting edge, trends and education that's at the forefront of it. And Lee runs at that caliber. He runs on that cutting edge. I've been watching him for a while on LinkedIn, and he's doing his own stuff. So we're just going to jump right into it. Lee, thanks so much for being here. If you just want to, Tell us your name and your background and maybe how you got into the industry or how long you've been in the industry, that sort of thing.
Cool. Yeah, definitely could do that. No, I appreciate the opportunity. I always love doing this, and especially too, seeing people get content and information out. I think our industry needs more of that. We are, especially in the access control and smart lock industry, we love cut sheets. We love product marketing. But when it comes to sort of storytelling and having conversations, we've left that really to be more in person at trade shows or local lunch and learns and things like that. But we, milk run sort of sales organization to go out to meet with you. But doing these types of things, I think, is extremely beneficial. So happy to support it. But so Leo Dess, I'm out of Bethesda, Maryland. So just outside DC area, been here for about 20 years. I cut my teeth in the security industry. I joined Brevo back in the day when it was early on. But before that, I had an integration firm myself with my wife. We did a lot of audio video, lighting controls. We did some security, but I partnered with a security company locally here in the marketplace. We did commercial, light commercial, and residential in the area. And then we decided to get out of that business, and I wanted to get back into manufacturing. So I joined Brevo. I was there for a while, went to Unikey, which was a small startup company. From Unikey went to Allegion. Allegion had my own consulting company, which was acquired by a company called Latch, who was a customer when they went public. And then I was there for about 10 months. Then I left and then went back to where I would say is my more natural habitat, which is focused on the access control and smart lock industry. What I currently do now is I think of it like as an analyst and content creator. When it comes to the marketplace, I look at roughly about 450 companies. We have a topology map that shows all the different companies in our space. It grows every single week. I've met with almost just about all of them to understand the strategy behind what they're doing, what they're looking for. And I like to write about, I have a brief, it's called the Access Control Executive Brief. And what it does is it talks about the trends that are happening in the marketplace. So if you think our industry has been historically cottage, in a lot of ways, delivering high security, which we've done really, really well as our value prop. And digital transformation is impacting our industry, and how what that's going to look like, that's what I like to talk about, and the changes that are happening. And it's fundamental throughout our entire industry. So it hits everybody, manufacturers, distribution, the channel, end users, everybody will be impacted by and is impacted by digital transformation. I like to write about that. I've got a Slack community of people that like access control and smart locks. We just did a show. We had 166 people from 15 different countries come together to talk about it. I create at different shows as well. So like Cretech or IC West, we did the lounge. It's what all these things are. You see on the wall here, I wrote a book about it. So we're really just focused on trying to be the voice of our industry because we have clear point of views of where we're at today and where we're going tomorrow. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah,
Awesome to hear, man. That's a killer resume. Can you tell us just a bit about the Brevo experience? Because I run in a non-for-profit called TechKnowledge Worldwide, and we have about 350 members. It's also a Slack community and a lot of technicians in there, a lot of guys who put in Brevo and run Brevo. I've worked on it. I've never installed it fresh from the start, but tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, for me, it was wonderful. It's so first cloud-based access control product. The history behind it's kind of interesting, where it was a product put together by a handful of guys that used to work for a company called Sapient back in the day when they would be contractors that were building websites for companies. This is back when, websites were new. And they had this concept and idea that what they wanted to eliminate was the yellow sticky note that UPS would put on your door when you had a package. So they actually built a box with Maytag, the people that made, refrigerators and dry washer dryers. They had an investment from the family that owned Chamberlain LiftMaster at the time. And what the idea and the concept was is you'd have this box that would sit on your front porch or in front of your house. It utilized the BBM network, which is the BlackBerry Messenger network, that when they opened the box, they put a package in, they would send you a message and a note saying, hey, you've got something secured on your porch. And they wouldn't have to, if you think about from a delivery standpoint, every time they leave one of these little notes on your front door, that UPS side, their operational efficiencies go way down because they have to do, they come back and give it to you. Also, there's a bit of frustration, when you come home and you see that yellow, you're like, damn, I wanted that thing, whatever that thing was, right? Like, so having this solved a lot of problems. But this was in 1999, I think, is when it happened. So, or no, it had to be earlier than that. I don't remember. There was a crash. They all moved out, and they basically said, oh, well, if we can do that for small boxes, we could probably do that for big boxes. And that big box was buildings. So they got into an access control business that way. It was built initially from utilizing the architecture of everything from infrastructure as a service to then moving to pure cloud and what they've had there, and sort of the rest is history. What was great for me personally, and what I liked about it, was it also was early in a lot of the things that are sort of commonplace now. But this concept and idea that you can take traditional access control and apply it to other services and other places. So when I was there, we had this Brevo Labs division where we were allowed to think creatively. So this is when Google Glass came out, for instance. So we did an integration with them to where you could tap to unlock the door or swipe to ignore, and it used an intercom, and it was neat. We were allowed to experiment. We did this thing called the identity box, which was tracing at the time and tracking MAC addresses on a phone, so you can see where people were within a building, and then you can unlock a door if they were coming up to it. We were at Salesforce's conference called Dreamforce, which is an enterprise software tool, and we had a lock there. We were like the first people to have hardware at the show. We were talking like, if I can manage people in my business online with this CRM tool, why can't I also manage doors? I've got people in doors there. Why couldn't I chat to the door to unlock when it tells me that someone arrived in a visitor management? So we were allowed to think different on that end. And it for me, it sparked my desire in this sort of ability that I strive for, to be able to look at where things are going while also having a leg centered into where they're at today. So a combination of today and tomorrow. Great company though. Very nice people, good product. They're having their moment right now. They just raised I think it was 92 million to continue to increase their coverage around the world. And they're definitely part of that crew of people that are sort of breaking off, that are looking at our industry, not from just high security, keeping bad people out, but now letting the right people in, and around data and this ability of value creation that changes when you apply our industry as a utility, which is, again, keeping bad people out, very important value that we do, but it's also about what else it does it enable. And they're one of the companies that's on the forefront of that.
Yeah, cool. And so that kind of led you to kind of your next experiment or experience, at least on your
Yeah, some would call it an
LinkedIn
experience, experiment too,
timeline.
yeah.
And that has to do with Latch. So I've seen Latch, and we've looked into implementing it once or twice, but can you kind of go over that story? What exactly happened there?
I mean, there's a lot that's in the written and that so people can read about sort of where the company is now. But for me, so they were a customer of ours when we were at a company called Group 337, which is the consulting and analyst, and we were creating content. And I'd say a moment in time, they acquired myself, all the content and stuff, though, and all the assets that we had in the team. We came over with grand visions and desires to grow the business into international marketplaces and other verticals and that they had. The company went through a SPAC, which is a non-traditional sort of way to go public. And I would say, like a lot of SPACs ran into, I'd say, you know, issues and concerns in that are well documented for a lot of companies on that end too, where they, you know, what they were supposed to be and never sort of turned into that. Since then, you fast forward, been a complete change in leadership over there, a complete change in really focus in a lot of ways. They brought in Jamie Siminoff, who was the guy that invented Ring, and his whole team from Honest Day's Work to now lead it. Where they're going, I have no idea. I don't have any visibility into what they're doing on that end. I know they have a team. They're still doing the locks and they're still doing multifamily. They've added on they've actually transitioned the name to door.com. It's no longer Latch. But you know, it was a good opportunity for me, my family and my coworkers and employees at the time to transition over to that. It just didn't turn out to be what we all believed it was going to be. The premise and idea I still believe in, this concept and idea that access control is a utility in a building. And it's one of the things that people on a regular basis interact with. You know, you look at these tenant engagement applications and some other things, and as great as those are, it's not something that everybody does. But everybody uses their card, the fob, the biometrics, their phone, whatever, to get into it. So if I have that real estate of somebody touching my application four times a day, what else could I do with that when I have a relationship now? Because again, I go back to it, the consumer on the end, which some people call end user, but they also confuse end user with sometimes the customer, the admin of the system, if you would. But if we think about consumers, the people that are, you know, have this in their phone, in their hand, if now I have a relationship with them because digitally they're interacting with me, where historically they were a card and they were a fob, we didn't know who they were. It was sort of like if that card was shown at the door and they checked the system and they were supposed to be there, it would beep, turn green, and you can go, right? Now I can have a different relationship with them. And what's the value that could be created up, on top of that? That was sort of the vision behind Latch was, we can extract more value with a relationship that we have with someone than the traditional business. That's still true. Maybe not for Latch. Maybe it is for Latch. I don't know. I don't talk to anybody over there. But from a conceptually sort of overview of like where the market is going, all of that is still true. And that's where companies are going after currently right now is leveraging the utility that we, and this is the space that we can command as an industry if we wanted to. This is where I look at from the integrator channel point of view. This is where, you know, a lot of the changes and things that are happening in the marketplace can be seen as net negative if you don't change with it. If you continue to do the same traditional stuff that we've always done and not recognize that there's a digital transformation happening that is 100% changing the fabric of our industry. I'd like to equate it to a phase change, which is sort of like we've always been water. It's now turning to ice. And that phase in the middle where it's like slush, that's where we're at right now. So it is true that on a daily basis, some things look the same as the old, but it doesn't mean that the new's not happening. And if you believe certain assumptions that are going on, inevitably this new is going to be the new norm. New truths are going to be there. There will be some old truths that come along, but predominantly they're going to change. And you too, as a practitioner who has built relationships local in the marketplace, and because there's hardware and software, that relationship is changing in the market that I believe it can be net positive if you change with it as well. I like to look at it as a math equation. As an industry, the numerator and denominator, only one of those was always changed. Like the channel always did the same. The way we sell always changed the same. The product was basically iterated the same. There would be little added parts and pieces that changed, but realistically, not a lot. So you didn't necessarily have to change. Now there's a fundamental shift, and you do need to change if you want to be relevant long term.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's a lot there.
No, that is the exact type of content that I want and that I push on this podcast, because I feel so. I actually started my career for 3 or 4 years in locksmithing, and it's like really prevalent in that industry that the gatekeepers to that industry are all usually older gentlemen. And so the changing of even the security from the locksmith industry, it was really hard to get those old locksmiths that are in their shop that have been there for 30 years to start to see things different, from whether it was key fobs or whether it was like automobile, you know, car keys and those sorts of changes that came into that industry. And I do feel like in the access control industry as well, that it still is kind of that old world thought that this is the way that we've always done it, this is the way we'll do it, and you can make it pretty and shiny on this side. But you're totally right. As the credential moves into mobile, as we move more digital, now we're beginning to access the relationship that you're talking about. And it makes me think of being able to touch on the convenience of that person's experience while in a building or while at their work. You were now being able to accommodate that, even to touch it and to be able to build something for the consumer, as you say, that can make it even better. So yeah, that's a really good point.
So let's break that down a little bit. So because you talked about some of the changes that are happening, and also, by the way, the part of the story that you told are, you know, the older people in the industry, you know, things aren't that too exists as well. This is an and, not an or conversation. Sure. I do think it's a declining point of view that over time, you know, will continue to degrade. Whereas this one, this new stuff is an exponential incline that I think is at a rate higher than the downfall of sort of where I think the industry is going. So if we break down a handful of things, I've said this a number of times that I don't believe that we have a technical problem as an industry. I think we have a demographics and an incentive problem, meaning that, like you said, the majority of our industry, a lot of it, not the majority, but a lot of it is older people, men, yeah, but regardless of it's men or women or whatever, but just older in general, which at certain points in their career, you don't take on as much risk. And a lot of the changes that are happening right now are injecting a lot of risk into the machine. And so the longer I can push it off to why I want to retire, frankly, yeah, because I'm tired or because I don't want to do it again or like whatever. I'm not interested because I thought like, man, I got like 5 years left to retire. Do I really want to take all on this new? That demographic isn't necessarily one that just drives change. And so that gets in the way of the decision-making and the changes that have happened on the industry. Now, I do see that changing in a lot of ways. I also think this is where you hear convergence of like the IT industry coming into what we have going on. Like there's new blood that is coming into the industry, different blood too, that comes into the industry, which is all great. And we need, and we should allow that to also grow and take part and have a voice as well, because just like the old truths exist, so do the new ones. The other thing you mentioned was, as an industry forever, the mindset change is happening here is that we've always looked at convenience, anything that was convenient, as counter to safety and security. We've actually been an industry of inconvenience, right? The more barriers and bollards and doors and locks, things that would slow you down to get into a space, were better. That's like how we delivered security posture. Whereas now people are saying, wait, hold up. Like, I got this thing and it seems to be a level of security that is good for me, as well as there's levels of convenience. So why can't I have both? And this idea that you can't have security and convenience is complete horseshit. And what you're going to have is, I do think security matters more in a lot of ways, because if you don't feel safe and you aren't safe, I don't care how good the lattes are in the building, I'm not going to go into it. And this is why we as an industry have this, we can command this space because we deliver safety and security. But if we continue to tell people they can't have conveniences, people are like water. They're going to go find the people that are going to be able to deliver them safety and security and convenience. So if we don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. And that's why you start to see these external threats coming into our industry that are being introduced. I had a call today with a company, very big fintech company, that's looking at access control as a feature of a larger value proposition that they bring. They do predominantly commerce, but now they're like, hey, people are paying with this thing. They also want to get into the door with this thing. So I'm just going to include the door part into the payment part, and we'll move on. So it's going to happen. Like, this is an inevitability that's going to be there. So security, as well as user experience, has never really been a thing that we've had to worry about as an industry. Like, again, if our systems defaulted, if you were supposed to get into a building, but the door for whatever reason didn't open, we celebrated that like as a good thing because it didn't let somebody in.
Yeah.
Now, that's a negative thing, because if I have to go to my office two times a day and I'm being forced to now, it better be a damn good experience every single time that I go. And if it's not, the next engagement survey that the HR department sends to me, I'm going to tell them how much it sucks for me to come to the office, because every time I want to get in the building, I can't. The parking garage, whatever it might be. So user experience is going to matter immensely to, as a stakeholder into our industry. And those that start to understand and have people that understand user experience are going to greatly benefit. The delta between a $10 billion high security nascent industry cottage delivering high value, great, to a $70 billion industry that is taking that 10 and building upon it value creation. So if I'm an integrator, I'm taking a look at how I can deliver safety and security, but then also conveniences and also around operational efficiency and revenue generation opportunities. I'm expanding my aperture to not only be a physical security integrator, but I'm looking at being a systems integrator for enterprise software tools at the same time. And when I say systems integrator, we confuse it sometimes with, I'm not talking about integrating video and readers and fire and I'm talking about ServiceNow. I'm talking, which, by the way, full disclosure, my wife works at, it's got nothing to do with this, but some people like to always be like, doesn't your wife work there? I'm like, yeah, what does that got to do with this? But anyways, Salesforce, ADP, Workday, enterprise software tools that your customers are looking for those to start to interact, because they're delivering a far larger value proposition, like, again, operational efficiencies or revenue generation.
So you say that, I think that it, a couple things to that, the older generation is kind of staving off maybe those new innovations coming in and having to set them all up and implement them and relearn them and put them into their security posture at whatever high level maybe job that they're running. Do you feel as if that delay is going to have maybe a sharp kind of off the cliff acceptance of the new things because they're going to get out of the workforce all around the same time, like a 10-year
span? Yeah. I mean, there's yes and no. I mean, I think it's declining. Do I think it's going to be a ledge and they just fall off? No, because there's certain verticals that have to catch up to the adoption, like, you know, federal government spaces, hospitals, like there's large venue type facilities, K through 12, for instance, that may be slower to adopt this. I do inevitably believe it starts to, you're already starting to see it creep into where the change is happening on that side. I do think that there's going to be a day where the old is out and the new is the new, and what's going to happen here. You know, when is usually the question I get. I mean, it's happening currently right now. I can give 100 different examples of, you know, use cases to where this is happening, and why I believe. I think over the next 5 to 10 years, you start to see we're still at the period where the old is the majority and the new is the minority in what we're talking about. It doesn't mean that one's good or bad. It just means that there's just a moment in time. I believe we're, call it 5 years away, to where the new is the majority and the old is the minority. And then I just think it degrades over time. That's why the analogy I like to give some of the legacy access control and smart lock companies, I'll call them digital locks, they're not even smart locks, in our industry, they're like a riptide where it's like calm on top, but just freaking chaos underneath. And they're all just focused on the calm on top. And if they just stuck their head underneath the water, you know, or sometimes you take a step back, you know, like if you're a lifeguard, you can see sometimes the riptides and the rest of it. But when you're standing in it, you can't. That's what's happening currently in the marketplace right now. And it's just a moment in time. Like a lot of the stuff I talk about, it's not like revolutionary, you know, I'm not the futurist of person that, no, it's like I'm talking about inevitable stuff that's going to happen. And we can argue about to what degree and at what time. But a lot of what I talk about is it's inevitably happening right now as we talk. It's just up to what speed and to when.
Yeah, degree. Yeah. So from the,
and by the way, sorry, I don't want to cut you off. You know, the channel is an interesting point, and I have empathy for it, because I know, like, when I had mine, for me to change something was massively disruptive in the fact of the ability for me to make money and service customers. Like my best, you know, my best guy on the crew, I took me, you know, a lot of money and a lot of time to get them certified and trained to a point that I now needed to extract value out of them. So for me to just pivot on to go do that would have been destructive to my company. That said, again, if we believe some assumptions and some things that are happening, what has to happen is if we can align on those, then we need to have the conversation that says, when is this going to happen? And then what are we going to do about it? Because it's inevitably coming. And there are some things you can easily bring on that I believe you can easily bring on that are not massively disruptive. Like, for instance, some cloud-based access control systems, like getting into the reoccurring revenue business versus the traditional project-based business. Now, you may not want to take your project-based team and make them all of a sudden do reoccurring, because the way accounting's done, notifications, SLAs, like all these things, fundamentally different. But figuring out how to air gap some of these places so you can experiment and go do, I would definitely do that. There's a couple guys I've run into, like there's one real big popular guy in Europe who actually sets up separate companies to be able to service these in a way to do it, because he doesn't mix the two together. Now, there is expenses that go in to go do that, and you have to have the desire to want to go do that, but it doesn't mean it can't be done.
Yeah. Kind of hearkening back to you talking about being a systems integrator, but from the point of systems that have to do with, you know, the more of that like operations side that you were talking about and those sorts of things. I feel as if, especially from the community that I am in, there is a lot of IT professionals and MSPs, you know, and these sorts of roles and company positions that they get into the building and they're helping on one end. And then they seem like the person with where technology is today to ask, well, can you put a lock on this door? Can we get a card reader here? And so I feel like there is a maybe expansion just from the consumer side, dipping into other what would be considered industries where it's all kind of technology, asking, can you do access control for that? And I know that there are some guys in the group that have kind of taken on learning to do that just because they see the profit in it. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, no, you definitely see, you know, yeah. I mean, if I go back to mine, like I wanted to be lighting control. We were doing wind systems and solar systems. So that's why it was called energy light control, with the concept and idea around, it was early in the green, like that's what we wanted to focus on. But then when I would show up the house, they're like, hey, can you also do the audio? And then I was like, well, yeah, I guess I can. And I, you know, at the time I look back at it as I wish I had more discipline in it, but I know that that's true of other places, like where it goes into. And this is why, again, I go back to, I find that a lot of us do that without a strategy. We do it because someone's asking and we want to make money and we want to service the customer, or we're worried that there's a fear of losing them as a customer, because if we say no, they'll go find somebody else. Or we have competitors that are coming in that have packaged it together and the rest of it. This goes back to my thought of, like, I do think if you believe, if the, especially the customer is asking for it, it's clearly happening, right? So what are you going to do about it? But I would put a strategy in place to be able to work your way into it, because it may even be a merger with somebody, an acquisition. It could be a discipline side that you invest in. You know, it's usually more involved than just saying yes. Like, okay, what locks, what readers, what access control systems, what don't you know about that, you know, you need to know, power supply, whatever, like all of the stuff that go with it. It just needs to be a core strategy of what you're doing. And it's only going to get worse now. Like our competition as we move into enterprise software systems is going to, it's broadening to where we're not far away from people that have been historically doing, say, deployments of Salesforce, CRM tools and marketing tools and the rest, are also getting into access control.
Yeah.
They just are.
Yeah.
To what degree and to when, that's, we can argue about it.
Definitely. What was your take from the access control industry on the pandemic? Like, just kind of a broad overview of where you saw
it. Was an accelerator.
Prior, where you saw it after. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the thing. So two parts on that. Number one, shame on us as an industry. And you, I've talked about like your cohort. You all went from one day being essential, they called you that, to the next day that went away, and we should have done something more with that. Like it that was something that stood out to me, is all of a sudden you had a bunch of people in the sort of, if you looked at the sort of power structure of our industry, you all were the literally the only thing that was keeping a lot of these companies afloat, because they couldn't get product in the market, installed and sales and the rest. They needed you in order to do that, because they physically weren't allowed to leave their house, right? So all of a sudden, you all had this currency as an industry that I don't think we did enough with, and something to think about there. So,
yeah.
I got a lot of thoughts on what you could do with it or what we should have done, whatever, but it's a thing. From a technology access control standpoint, it accelerated a whole lot. It also exposed some complete bullshit from our industry, like seamless and frictionless access control and locks. It was complete bullshit. We took ADA compliant products, saw an opportunity to remarket those same exact products as seamless, and then when they went in the market, people were like, nah, this isn't what I was talking about. Like, if I have to like wave in front of this thing here and the door takes 10 seconds to open, that's not what people were looking for. So that exposed some things like that, but it also though accelerated things like, for instance, the belief that the systems that they were installing have to deliver comfort to the person, people that are acquiring them. So like customers, that you're going to be able to help from whatever the next unknown thing is. A lot of the systems that we had in place, a good example, they didn't have the architectures involved to be able to remotely access their systems. So you had no visibility. Were the doors locked? Were they not? Were they open? Who came? Who went? No idea, right? So it showed the need for some of these architectures like cloud-based that it will accelerate the adoption. But what it did, in my opinion also, though, is it caused people to ask questions about their current supplier and understand their roadmap better, their philosophies better, those types of things. It also, I mean, a tactical thing, it showcased that visitor management systems have been sort of the redheaded stepchild of our industry in a lot of ways, to where we treated them as either compliance tools or as cool factor. I didn't want a clipboard, so I put this thing in. And really, we didn't do enough with those. And what they became instantly was everybody was a visitor, whether you worked there or not, knowns and unknowns. And then I had to introduce health attestation apps. And basically what we did was they moved the analog reader on the front door to a digital one, to where I had to react and an engagement with the customer here. And it moved our systems from being at the front door and inside to out on the street and into your house. I'm now interacting with these systems. That dynamically changed the interaction that I had with the systems and how I approached them. And frankly, visitor management became really a digital interface to our systems overnight, which is, I think, had immense value on that end to where you saw companies, that entire marketplace, which was fragmented. There's like 10 companies. They all were acquired and moved around, or they got into access control now like they weren't before. And like, there's just a lot that came out of that. And then I would say that the biggest, also one of the biggest things that is that you saw the external financial markets, you know, PE firms, venture capitalists, the rest of it, see our industry as a good place to put money. Because it was seen as a critical infrastructure piece that had a whole, well, frankly, a fragmented market with nascent companies that weren't really innovating, with a huge amount of opportunity to extract value. And so you had a whole bunch of money that's been flushed into the marketplace to be able to create. And we're now starting to see and beginning to see the byproduct of what that means.
Yeah. And so you mentioned those companies and, you know, getting acquired and stuff like that. So our industry for the last, you know, decade has just, acquisition is like a news bulletin point in the first couple pages of like publications about security. You know, they're talking about who's getting acquired and who's getting, you know, bought by who. I've always been a little wary of it just because I don't want all of the chips to end up in one person's hands. But for the most part, from your experience and your vantage point, what is your take on the acquisitions within our industry? And is it moving too fast? Is it not moving slow enough? Is there kind of big powerhouses that are running the whole thing? Or how do you see that?
Is it from a manufacturing standpoint or from the channel?
Good question. Yes, I would say more from like the manufacturing standpoint of an integrator, you know, kind of both integrators buy different sets of their product lineup, and all those products are coming from, you know, one company.
Yeah. So I think M&A work is important for a number of reasons. Number one, these companies need organic and inorganic growth. Like, it's just a way they do it. I think different companies have different strategies when it comes to the M&A side. And some express it more, like Assa Abloy seems to utilize it a lot more than, say, Allegion or Dormakaba on that end, right? It's just a philosophy of how they grow their companies. They do make some acquisitions, so like Allegion acquired Stanley, right? But they're not as free, like Assa Abloy seems to do like 4 a month.
Yeah,
I just think it's a difference in strategy of how they go about it. I think it's going to continue. I think we have, especially in the commercial real estate, the physical access control PACS side of it, the software hardware companies, I think you're going to see a lot of consolidation on that end. You're also going to see a lot of new players come in. For a lot of reasons, I think it's net positive in a lot of ways because two couple things, reasons why. A, the companies that are being acquired maybe didn't have the wherewithal or the capital, whatever I mean, to actually expand their business, to go do what they need to go do, go build the channels, go do a bunch of stuff that they now will have the opportunity to do. So like, take, for instance, there was a SecureTac was just acquired by Assa Abloy. One of the big things that comes from that is they now can tap into the distribution that they couldn't do themselves. So like, I'm sure there's negativity on it because maybe the pricing changes, I don't know, or maybe the customer service changes, but there's also positives. There's both sides. There's been great examples where it's been good and great examples would be bad. So it really, I think, is important to look at the nuance end of it to understand and really say, was that net positive or net? I think it's more positive on that end. I think also what it does is, I think there's a lack of appreciation of the second and third time at the table that these people get after they've been acquired, because they've gotten some capital. They may have to sit out for 2 or 3 years because of some golden handcuffs, but it's very common that they come back with new ideas, new concepts. They even invest in stuff too. So I think it's a great way for companies to shed skin and reapply capital in different areas to allow other things to grow and blossom as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good perspective.
I think it's good. I mean, I net, net I'm a net positive guy of it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, like I really do. I think, yeah, their bad comes from it in some cases. And there's, for every one that I tell you is good, you could probably show me another that was bad. But in aggregate, I think it's more net positive than net negative. That could also just be my overall disposition in life, but that's how I approach it.
What do you feel like right now in access control and smart locks is the, like the bleeding edge, the cutting edge thing that's trending or beginning to, like, you know, reroute where we're going as an industry?
Yeah. I mean, so I believe the cloud architecture and mobile architecture, not cloud as a feature, not mobile as an iterated thing where I'm just putting a card in my phone now. I'm talking about the actual architect. People build that way coming into it without thinking about, like, oh, I need to add cloud. It's like, no, that's just how we do it. Like, that's what we do. Like, we use the tools to create. I think that's fundamentally going to shift not only the technology side, but it's going to shift the business end of it. And it's transforming relationships. Like, this is where you get into, like, all of a sudden from the business development side, manufacturers, you know, if we call them that, they're like enterprise software companies, are going to talk to end users and sell to them directly in some cases. They're going to team with integrators as well, and they're going to not call on service. So there's just, it just changes the way that the relationships on that end, which I think will be net positive, and will create more opportunity than hurt existing. And again, if we don't change, it's going to be net negative. But if we change, and I'm, you know, the assumption is we're talking about going after that $70 billion market opportunity, not defending the $10 billion. I want the $70 billion, things change, opportunity pie is a lot bigger. $10 billion, I'm afraid of change and like, oh, who moved my cheese? Yeah, you're in trouble. You're not if you're over there. So I think that'll do. I'm extremely excited about thinking about the way that access control currently right now is being applied to additional value creation stories, like around revenue generation and around things like operational efficiencies, like the added benefits there. If I look even further out, I believe computer vision and AI and ML are going to have a massive disruption. We've been talking about convergence of video and access as like this thing where an event happens at the door, so I want a video clip. That's cute. I get it. That is some convergence. It's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the leveraging of video systems, cameras with access control, and this idea that I want high levels of assurance with high levels of throughput and convenience, with high levels of not reactive systems, but proactive systems, learning systems, self-healing systems. I think the relationship of when I show up to a building currently right now, I'm given an identity and I have to express it to it. And if I have the rights, I get in to this idea and concept that I'm going to walk up to a building and I'm going to express who I am to it. And it can compute on the edge at the reader, but then also go out to the cloud when it needs to do compute. Like that relationship to where I want to start showing up to places, especially ones that are repeatable models where I've been there a number of times. Like if you think about it, we all kind of go to the same places within 10 miles probably of our house majority of the time, right? Like the gym, the grocery stores, the kids' places if you got kids, the theater, the mall, whatever it is, the restaurants. Like we kind of do. Yeah, sure, we expand out, but majority of the time. But right now, every time I go to those things, it's like the first time I've ever been there. It doesn't know who I am. Anywhere else in our life, if we did that, be like, man, that guy's an asshole. Every time I see him, he doesn't say hello to me, right? But like, yeah. We're like, oh, that's how our systems work. And we're just supposed to think that that's okay. That's bad user experience. So the way that the systems are functioning, in my opinion, are gonna change. And I do believe computer vision and AI and ML are going to impact heavily. I think every access control company is going to be a video company and every video company is going to be an access control company, which trickles down to every integrator is going to do audio. I mean, sorry, audio. I'm going back to my old days. Every integrator is going to do access control and video. And if I'm them, I'm starting to brand myself as a systems integrator of these systems. And it may not be hardware installation. It may be. There may be times where it's just systems integrating. Like, I don't know. So, yeah, that's what I'm excited about.
So you're saying like we become the credential. Our expression becomes the credential at the
door. You own your identity, self-sovereign identity, for instance. This idea that you are who you are.
Expand on that a little bit, because that's not talked about a lot in integrator circles, but it's talked about in the articles I read. So, expand on that a little.
There's far greater people that can, I would tell you there's a thing called NFID, which is an association, a group that's come together. There's a guy by the name of Kabir and another guy that I can get you their contact information. They could talk all day on this stuff, and they're doing it. They actually just did, it's the guy that owns Passabolt worked with PDQ, which is a lock company. And they did an installation at three hotels that have door locks that are using decentralized identity, ledgers, self-sovereign identity. It's a concept of the idea that you own your identity, frankly, and you have the ability to express the information that you want to, the attributes of it in the format that you want to whatever it is downstream that you're looking to work with. But it's the concept and idea that your identity, you own it. You then express the attributes of it that you need to in order to get whatever you want in return. So like, for instance, when you go buy alcohol and they ask your identity, you give them your ID. It's got a whole bunch of information they don't need, but they have it just because it's on there. So imagine that that relationship is done in a manner that only pulls the information, or there's a third party over there that just says, yeah, they're good to go. You don't even need the information. You just need the thumbs up that they can go do it. There's a lot more involved in it. I'm not doing it any service. I'm not an expert in it. I just know that it's making impacts in these are where I look at these assumptions of the concepts and ideas that people are going to own their identity more and be able to express it. That changes the entire relationship where we've been an industry that's been about given identity. So what are the downstream secondary effects? That's like where I like to spend my time to think about, all right, if I believe these things are going to happen, what are the outcomes that I think could happen? What's the possibility that's going to happen? And then what are you going to do about it? If you do believe that that's going to happen, you do believe it's possible, what are you going to do about it?
Mm. Yeah. So you obviously got together and talked about this. I want to pivot a little bit to ACS. So tell us about ACS. Like, when was it this year? When is it next year? And kind of how that formed and give us the background on that.
No, I appreciate it. So ACS, Access Control Summit, was sort of an idea and a concept that I felt the industry needed to have its own get together where it talked about where it is today and where it is going to go tomorrow. We themed it around digital transformation. We got 166 people to come in, a lot of them executives in our industry, some integrators, some distributors, end users, and manufacturers of different products and services. From 15 different countries. So we had people from Australia and Taiwan to all over Europe come into it as well. As in Washington, D.C., we did it at a really cool venue called the Architect Institute of America, AIA, D.C. has a really cool location. So it had a design theme to it. We did 24 panels, I think it was. We had 9 one-on-ones. We had 62 speakers. They did 15 or 20 minute presentations, no PowerPoints, all discussion. Had a really nice event, the reception the night before, 150 of them showed up. It's kind of interesting. I had the data of like what they all bought for drinks. Were very red wine and beer and old fashions. Red wine, beer, old fashioned, white wine were like the top that people wanted. So the event, it was awesome. Full day, everyone was thrilled. It looked good. It went well to the point that we're going to do it again next year in October here in DC. That'll be sort of the flagship one that's looking at the entire industry. It'll be themed. We're also doing it in Europe. So April 29th and 30th of next year, we're going to co-locate it with the security event in Birmingham in the UK. Same type of thing, more European focused. We'll theme it there too. And maybe it will be about AI. I don't know. I haven't thought about it yet. We're still working on the location, the rest of it. But this idea and the concept is we as an industry have a narrative and a point of view. And we like to talk about it through product and technical. but there are also business implications. And we really had, it was a business conversation. Everything from the global view of the current opportunities, we talked about verticals, we talked about standards and the need for them and the impacts of our industry. There was a panel on talent. There was a panel on marketing and communications. And then we had a bunch of one-on-ones. I had the CEO of HID there, the CEO, the general manager of Linel S2, of Onity Supra, Dormakaba, Kadas, which is a lock company. Shakar from Ambient AI. So wide variety of companies that were there to discuss where our industry is today and where it's going tomorrow.
What was your favorite part as the host?
The community getting together from a concept and idea that a couple things like back, my wife and I, we did the lighting control at this back when we had our company, and we wanted that venue to do something one day. So it was like a dream of ours for like 15 years and we got to do it. So that felt very meaningful to me and my family. To seeing all of these people fly in from all over the world to see and trust that there was an opportunity here. So to just see that together and then just the execution of it. I've got, you know, it's me and a woman by the name of Hillary on my team and this guy Bert that does all of our design work. You know, a small group to put off something like that that seemed to get really good reviews. It was very meaningful.
Yeah, that's really cool. The nonprofit that I'm a part of, Technology Worldwide, they do the same thing with philanthropy. So they'll have like a charity event where they'll pick somebody who needs like a tech upgrade. So the charity being given is actually technology. And yeah, the guys will fly out and I've been out to the one last year and it's just kind of that same thing, man. When the community gets together and you see other people doing it, it is inspiring for sure. So yeah, so that kind of leads me also to your access control executive brief. You talked about that, but I wanted to make sure that people knew kind of about what that was and where to access that, because I know a lot of the people who listen to this podcast, they're looking for that information. I've gotten really good feedback on like, oh, like thanks for, you know, giving that product highlight, or thanks for, you know, talking about that topic. That's made me think about this. So go ahead and...
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah, open that.
Yeah, it's if you go to leodesk.com, so my first and last name.com, the access control, you can sign up there for it. It's paywalled, so I send them out, about, I'd say, twice a month. I write about what's going on in the industry. There's a Slack group that has the community involved there. There's some tools in that you can get. But yeah, I mean, I try to keep it as pretty much straightforward as possible, is that... This is how it funds the ability for us to go do those things. And we try to create value and bring it back to the community of like, here's triangulating all of these trends and all of these companies and everything that's going on and try to distill it down to information that is either thought provoking or actionable or thought provoking and actionable. And yeah, people can go to leodesk.com and sign up. And there's some free stuff that we have there as well, like the topology map. And then there's some paywalled stuff as well awesome. That we believe adds a ton of value.
How long have you been doing that?
So we've been doing this since October of last year. But I did it for the Group 337 thing back in, we started that in January 2020. And that was for 2 years. So about, call it January of 2022 is when we stopped, worked at Latch for a little bit, then started this back up.
Okay, right on. Well, I really appreciate the conversation. And thank you for, you know, highlighting those things and talking about the industry. I follow your stuff all the time. Where can people find you? Because I'm sure after just this, you know, little hour podcast, they're gonna want to get a hold of some of your content. So where can they find you at?
On LinkedIn, so Leodesk on LinkedIn, you can find me there, or on my website, leodesk.com.
Awesome. All right, well, guys, go check that out and check Leodesk out. Thanks for tuning in on the first segment of The Room Where It Happens, and definitely something happened today with all that information, so I know you're going to be turning some gears, but I appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we'll have you back on again, maybe driven by a topic or something, so...
Would love to do it. Thanks for doing what you do. Thank you.
Thanks so much. All right. Bye.
No problem, buddy.